tarry here. Now and we're all in this place, so be sure to smile at each passing face as it draws near. So tarry here.
Good afternoon. 1, 2, 3, 4. We're on air. Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I am Stosh Zielkowski.
Hi, Stosh.
Hi, Fanny.
We're your Storytelling Hour co-hosts. And before we get much into the program, I want to be sure that the almost first thing you hear me talk about today is Eileen Evans, who will be at Stories in the Round this evening at 7 p.m. in Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike, which is the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown. And we'll talk more about that and the other Stories in the Round sessions coming up later in the program. But if this is brand new to you, write down this phone number, and then after this broadcast, you can call me up and get advance tickets or get your questions answered. So my phone number is 301-730-1638. I won't take your call until after 1 p.m., but if you want more information about Eileen Evans at Stories in the Round, that's how you find out.
And today's story theme is living arrangements. Fanny's going to start us off with a traditional folk tale. Fanny?
Thank you, Stosh. This is a European folk tale. It's called Snow White and Rose Red. There were once two sisters who lived with their mother in a small cottage in a clearing in the midst of the great forest. Snow White, hair fine as silk and such a pale blonde color it was almost white, was quiet and shy in temperament. But she loved to entertain her sister and mother with fanciful stories she related every evening as they worked stringing bean pods from their garden on long strands of twine to dry in the attic for winter soups, or sometimes sitting by the fireplace sewing. Rose Red's dark, auburn, curly hair bounced in rambunctious ringlets around her face as she sang to the birds in the garden or practiced handstands on the front porch. Her personality was a lot like her hair, outgoing and lively, spending as much time as possible outside. Their father had died when the girls were very young, and now it was just the three of them in their little family. Their mother worked hard, sewing for the townspeople at the edge of the forest and growing much of what the family ate from their small, neat garden. And now that they were no longer so very young, nor very little, Snow White and Rose Red worked hard too, helping in the garden and collecting the mending baskets full of dresses that needed hems let down, work clothes that needed cuffs turned, and carrying the clothing back to the owners in town once it was all made perfectly new and neat by their mother's exquisite sewing skills. The three of them had not much in the world except the small cottage, the well-tended garden, and trade with the townspeople, but that was enough for them. One icy cold winter night, as the chimney of the cottage puffed out small but regular puffs of fragrant hardwood smoke from the logs those three hardworking women cut and stored under the house all summer and now fed to the small hot iron stove, there came a thumping and a knocking on the cottage door. Rose Red ran to open it. There on the porch was an enormous brown bear. Rose Red was a bit put off by the sight of a bear on their front porch. But the bear explained. He reassured her and said he had traveled a great distance over several days and nights, and he only wanted a place by a warm fire out of the wind and sleet. Rose Red took that request into the house to Snow White and their mother. They discussed it for a minute, but after proper introductions, they invited the bear in. And he laid down his great bulk in front of the fire. He took up almost half the room. Rose Red found an old blanket to rub the water and sleet from his heavy coat. And then Snow White told her newest story, her newest creation, about elves lost in the snow. And they laughed a bit, and then they all started yawning, and they settled down for the night and went to sleep. In the morning, the bear was eager to be on his way, but the sisters begged him to stay for breakfast, and he did, but politely ate only one small bowl of homegrown oatmeal, same as everybody else in the family. The last they saw of the bear that day was his broad brown rump bounding down the path into the forest. Late that night, there came a thumping and a knocking on the cottage door. Rose Red ran to open it, and there again was that same enormous brown bear, headed back home from his travels. He'd been to town, and he was carrying a great basket of nuts and honey and cheese, his favorite foods, to thank them for their kind hospitality. They invited him in again, rubbed him down of sleet and ice, because the weather was not much better that evening. And then he settled down by the fire, and with one dry leg pressed almost on top of Rose Red's foot, they all went to sleep. Well, Snow White had provided another elf tale first. In the morning, there was a bowl of oatmeal for each of them, this time with nuts and honey and cheese. And the last they saw of the bear that day was his broad brown rump disappearing into the forest. But he came back late that night, and the night after that, and the night after that. He returned every night that winter, usually with fine food and drink for breakfast, and then went off every morning to do whatever it is a bear will do on his own in the great forest. All three of the women and the bear seemed to adjust well, even happily, to their new living arrangements. Then spring arrived, and summer. The bear explained that he would be leaving them. Summer, he said, is the season for greedy and malicious green trolls to be abroad, waked from their winter hibernation, casting about for other people's valuables and treasure to steal. He said he had not very much in the way of valuables or treasure, but what he had he wished to keep safe. And that very morning he was off, trundling down the path into the forest. Some days later, Snow White and Rose Red were walking in the forest, scouting the best springs and pools for watercress, for a special surprise tea party for their mother. They happened upon a frightened, blustering troll, a green troll, his long, wispy, goat-like beard caught in the cracked cleft of a tree. They could hear him wailing and shouting some angry words they'd never heard before and did not know the meanings of, shouting at the tree as he beat upon it with a stout walking stick. He cracked the stick, but was not having much luck freeing his beard. Together, Snow White and Rose Red managed to pull apart the cleft in the tree just enough to pull the troll free. They got no thanks for their trouble. In fact, the troll gave them each a smack on the head for pulling his beard, and a kick to each of their shins for leaving a bit of his beard in the crack. And then he was gone. But a few weeks later, hunting for truffles, they came upon the same troll. They recognized his worse for wear, wispy beard, his angry wails, and creative curses. This time he was twisted up in a patch of blackberry brambles, his jacket caught all which ways, arm crisscrossed, so that he could not even reach the buttons to wiggle out of the sleeves. Fortunately for the troll, this time Snow White was carrying a small truffle knife in her basket, and together the two girls were able to cut him out of the jacket. The troll was, if anything, even angrier than last time, accusing them of intentionally losing his buttons in the brambles and destroying his word, his tailored suit. He pushed them hard into the brambles as he ran off, and it was more than an hour and many, many painfully clipped brambles later before they were able to detach themselves. Their third meeting, almost a month later, was right upon the path. He came barreling round at top speed, which after all is not all that fast for a troll, for anything longer than a quick sprint, but it was fast enough to knock the wind out of Snow White as he slammed into her middle section with his head, watching the ground below him rather than ahead of him as he ran. Snow White and Rose Red sat down abruptly in the middle of the path as the troll tripped over both of them, shouting his favorite words again as he rolled over and over trying to right himself. Really, they were quite a tangle of short troll legs, bugged out angry troll eyes, longer girl legs, and lots of tousled girl hair, so they were a bit distracted. Troll and girls jumped about a foot as a massive mountain of brown fur came roaring, jaws agape, around the turning in the path. The green troll began shrieking, screaming his words, "Eat them! Eat them! They have your jewels in their baskets!" as he removed his now empty hands from the inside of the truffle baskets. "There are the culprits! Thief! Thief!" Snow White and Rose Red cowered in fear, not at all sure they recognized this brown-furred, raging animal now towering over them, fangs parted, hot breath visible in the cool forest air, only a few feet from their faces. Then the bear dropped down on 3 feet with his right front paw and extraordinary supernatural strength. He swept the troll high into the air, catapulting that fiend over trees, over the closest craggy peak, and beyond, far, far out beyond the edge of the forest. The troll was now too far away for Snow White and Rose Red to hear his shrieking, but the bear's hearing was better than theirs. And he rumbled a low, self-satisfying rumble. Snow White and Rose Red stared at him wide-eyed. 1 minute, he was an enormous, wild, fur-bound warrior. The next instant, he was a sweating, chainmail-wearing prince, fashionably shod in tall leather boots, capped with a leather helmet, the chin strap dangling loosely below his right ear, and bearing a broad steel sword by its bejeweled hilt. The troll, one of the last of its kind, possessed of stolen amulets and magical curses, had lusted for the prince's treasure and conspired with a wicked wizard he later roasted and ate to spell the said prince, steal his riches, and shapeshift him to bearish countenance and habits. Caught at long last by this bear, thrown from the forest, the seat of the wizards and the now troll's stolen power, the troll was helpless. The curse was broken. Rose Red, of course, married the bear, the prince. Snow White married his younger brother, and then Rose Red and Snow White, often accompanied by the royals, helped their mother renovate and expand the cottage to hold all of them each summer, and convince their mother to live with them at the royal palace through each winter. And while they may not have all lived completely happily ever after, these living arrangements brought them very close to that, generously sharing love, treasure, and domiciles with those in need.
Wonderful. I can honestly say I never heard that story before.
It's close to the original. Oh. With some liberties.
Yes. Thanks for that story, Fanny. That was great. Let's see. I'm going to do a station ID now. You are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And we just heard Fanny Crawford tell her version of Snow White and Rose Red, which was absolutely marvelous. Okay, Fanny, so connect that story to our theme today.
Well, you announced, maybe not to our audience, you might have only announced it to me, that our theme today is living arrangements. And, you know, I thought about that for a while. Now, in the traditional Snow White, Rose Red story, the bear is a friend and a kind of protective figure. He's scary, but he is mostly benign. Even while the troll, or in the original story, it's usually a dwarf. But the troll or the dwarf is the dangerous interloper. And I was thinking about how all of us arrange our living spaces. And it seems to me that when we think about the outside world, the elemental forces are the ones that shape our environment, or that's how we think about it. But while you can see the weather and environmental changes as things that happen to you, you could also see them as an interactive process.
Right.
And both sides, both perspectives, whether you're working with nature or you're frightened of nature and what it might become, those are both in this story. I hope that was kind of where I got to.
I think it came through very well.
Okay.
I do have another question, but first I'm going to do a speak calendar announcement. On August 8th at Reynolds Hall on the campus of Shepherd University, Jane Dorfman from Maryland will be coming to tell Tales from the Arabian Nights. And her program is Tales for Adults, full of twists and turns and somewhat risque. So there's a lot of cross-dressing and even some erotic poetry in this program.
I'm looking forward to that one.
I am too, and I hope everyone leaves their little ones at home for this night. And then in September at Reynolds Hall, on the third Tuesday of the month, instead of the normal time, which would be this normal day, which would be the second Tuesday, Bill Harley will be here. And Bill uses song and story to paint vibrant and hilarious pictures of American life. He is a Grammy Award winner and one of America's great storytellers. In October, at Reynolds Hall, from England, by way of Skype, we will have Jan Blake. And it will be interactive. The audience will be able to see her on a large screen. She'll be able to see the audience. And I don't know how big her screen will be. But we're all looking forward to that. In November, at Reynolds Hall, November 14th, Mark Harshman, who is poet laureate of West Virginia and teller of many different kinds of tales. He's also an author of children's books. On December 12th at Reynolds Hall, West Virginia Shepherdstown's own Adam Booth will finish the series for the year. Adam will be telling some of his original tales, and he blends folklore, music, and an awareness of contemporary Appalachia. He has two Parents' Choice Silver Awards, 4 Storytelling World Awards, has appeared at National Storytelling Festival, yeah. And is also the 4-time winner of the West Virginia Liars Contest. So it's a very exciting lineup coming up. Okay, now my question about Snow White and Rose Red. Is there only one story about Snow White and Rose Red?
There's different versions of the story, okay. So I guess you could say there's more than one, because some of them, the variants can be pretty different from each other.
If someone had asked me before you said you were going to do Snow White and Rose Red, I would have had it was a nice surprise. It's nice to have a story that you don't know. And of course, there are a lot of those.
So you have a story for us, I think, Stosh.
I do.
You want to tell it now?
Yes. Okay, this is a much different tale than yours.
Because different time period.
This is a personal story.
Yeah.
And a different time period. Actually, this occurred just a little over 30 years ago in my life. And if I gave a title to this story, it would be Midlife Bachelor Living Arrangements. For lots of reasons, none of which are important to the story. In 1986, my first wife and I separated. And I had to find a place to live because it was decided that I would leave the house. At first, I was at a loss for what I was going to do, but then I remembered the person who has loved me ever since the day I was born and took good care of me throughout my life, took me on dates with her, and that I called my sister, who was living in Baltimore in our parents' home. After both of our parents were deceased, my sister moved into the house, and she lived there with her husband. I called her and asked her if I could come and stay there for a while, and she said, of course. And she and her two daughters, well, both grown-ups, straightened out my old room. At first, I didn't even think about my old room, just that my sister was welcoming me to my home where I grew up, and I was looking forward to it. The very first day I got there, and the three women took me to my room on the third floor, I had a flashback, and something I hadn't thought about for years was I hated my room. When I was a kid, I was scared to death of going to bed because the stairs creaked. My brothers had told me great stories that I would love now as an adult, but as a young boy, as a child, they told me stories all about the goblins that lived on the roof and in the closets, and I don't think I had a really good night's sleep until my first day in the Army when I left the house. So anyway, I said to my sister, you know, I'd rather not stay up here. And it was summertime, and I said, it's always hot on the third floor here, so how about if I use Mom and Pop's room, which was on the second floor? And that room was available. So I put my stuff in that room, and that night I experienced the second remembrance of that house. My father bought the house in 1941, just before I was born, from the widow of a man who sent his wife to a show on a Sunday afternoon and then hung himself in the doorway of my parents' future bedroom. As a young child, my brother, Tony, 3 years older than I am, delighted in the very first time he took me to that doorway and told me this great story about how they had found Mr. Edwards' body hanging from that doorway. And for many years as a youngster, I would go from the first floor to the second floor landing, and then I would make a dash 5 steps across the landing and take a turn to the left and up the next flight of steps as I went by that doorway. I was an adult in my 40s, and I couldn't sleep that night thinking about that body hanging from a rope. A couple times in the shadows, I imagined that I saw it. But I did get used to sleeping in that room, and I was glad to be with my sister and her husband. And because they were so kind to me and took me in, I decided I would do some things for them around the house. My brother-in-law was not very handy. He did lots of things outside the house. In fact, he cleaned out people's attics and their basements as a side job. He worked full-time, and he found treasures in those places. He did lots of jobs where people would pay him just to get rid of all the stuff. And a lot of stuff he would take to the dump, but some of the stuff he found were, you know, things he could sell. He did not do much around the house, and so I began to fix things. A light fixture in the kitchen that was actually sort of hanging off the wall, just holding on by wires, I managed to put it back. I was pretty good with my hands and doing mechanical things. And I fixed a railing on the steps leading down to the basement, and I moved a lot of things that seemed to be just cluttering the different rooms. I found a box of S&H stamps, which were an incredible find because my sister and her husband had lost that box somehow and actually thought that maybe one of their children had taken it. And those stamps were worth a lot because you could go through a catalog and get all kind of prizes. So they were happy about that. But as time went on, without me realizing it, I had really gotten on my brother-in-law's nerves. I had fixed so many things that my sister had asked him to do, and he hadn't done for a long time, that it finally got to a point where he couldn't stand having me around. And so about 5 weeks after I moved in, on a Saturday afternoon, I came home from a run, and my brother-in-law just said, short and sweet, I want you to pack your clothes and leave. And I said, did I do something wrong? He said, I just don't want to talk about it. I want you to leave. You're making your sister very upset with me, and this is my home, and I don't want her to be upset with me. So I did. I packed my stuff. My sister was away on a bus trip to Atlantic City for, she liked to go to the casino, and so I was gone. I had my stuff in the car, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But I had a very good friend who I had visited a number of times since moving back to Baltimore. And a number of Saturday evenings, I had gone to their house for dinner, and I was supposed to go there for dinner that night. And I did. And I hadn't planned on saying anything about it, but he went outside to get something from his car, and he noticed my car was full of stuff. And they pressed me on what was going on. I told them, you know, I'd been thrown out of the house. Thrown out isn't the exact word, but... So anyway, they invited me to move in with them. And they had a young daughter. And she was only about 2 years old. But they had a small bedroom up on the second floor. And so I did. I moved in with them. I had known them for a good while, and it was very kind of them, and I told them I would find a place to live as soon as possible, but that night I was very grateful for that. That didn't last very long, because I think it was a case of where good friends that hung out together and did lots of things together cannot always live together. And it wasn't anything terrible. It was just that I had to really watch my opinions. It turned out that I had vastly different opinions about many things. And being a bit older than both of them, sometimes I forgot that I shouldn't express those opinions in a household where I was being kindly given a place to stay. So... like lots of tales, there is a third move. A friend of mine, near where my family lived, my wife and two daughters, called me and said that she had seen a notice on the college bulletin board that a local veterinarian was looking for someone to live in his veterinary hospital. And he had posted on the college bulletin board, I guess figuring that a lot of college kids would like to have a room by themselves away from the dorm. She gave me the phone number, and actually I knew the man because I had taken an animal to him a few years before that he had done work on. I went to his place, talked to him. He remembered that his son, who was much younger than I, had been in a stage production with me. And that his son had got along real well with me, so he invited me to live there. It was rent-free, and the only thing I had to do was let him know if I would not be there overnight. Turned out that he got a great break on his insurance if someone was living on that property all the time. And so I did, moved in. I did some odd jobs for him. I had a tiny room, but his female assistants were very kind to me. Every once in a while, they would bring me some treats before the end of the day when they were going home, and I'd come home from my teaching position. And so for the next 2.5 years, I lived in the back of this veterinary hospital in a small room. I had a private bathroom, and I had use of the kitchen, and I had a great time living there. And the reason I left is a whole other story.
So we'll hear the next installment some other time.
Yeah. Yes. and that's not just about living arrangements. That's a completely different thing. but the living arrangements were kind of fun, and that all happened in the period of about 4 months.
Oh, wow. So. Well, I have questions to ask you about that story. But before I do that, I wanted to talk about our podcasts, because we haven't mentioned those yet today. Mm-hmm. And if our listeners are coming in late, or you want to hear past shows or hear other storytellers who've been on our shows, you can go to talltales.enlightenradio.org, and there's a whole list of past programs that you can turn into. And this session will also be up on as a podcast within a few days, so by the end of the week you can also hear this show again. And I think Eileen Evans, who's our storyteller tonight at Stories in the Round, I think we have an interview with her up on the website too. So that's, if you've never heard Eileen Evans before, that's a good way to get introduced to her work. And we'll talk more about Stories in the Round later on. But Stash, I'm interested in this story. Have you been telling this story for a long time?
No, I haven't. I've told a few parts of it, because even though it happened over a period of just a few months, about 4 months, I think it's interesting. You know, there's a saying about fish and house guests both start to smell after a couple of days. And there wasn't anything ever really wrong about, you know, the reasons for me moving. Mm-hmm. It just was not good situations.
Yeah.
And truly, my sister and her husband were very kind to offer me a place to live. And my friends were also. But it's just disrupting someone's home and their lifestyle.
Well, I think it's really astute of you to figure out that if you want to keep these people in your life in a positive way, the way you had them as friends or family, that sometimes what's convenient isn't always good for everybody. And
yes,
it's
definitely
the relationships we want to protect. So
yes,
that's interesting.
That's true.
I also find it really interesting that this vet with this empty room, it seems like a different time period when people thought about trade-offs in a different way. So he was getting some economic benefit from your being there. But I would suspect that most businessmen, and a vet, of course, is a businessman in some ways, that they would be weighing the costs and benefits in a whole different algebra or a different kind of mathematics.
I think in his case, really, it was because of his son. I think he might have preferred to have a college student who mm-hmm. would have absolutely been there every night, probably, mm-hmm. you know, some quieter person. And I was there, you know,
most nights.
99% of the time.
Yeah.
Nights. But as has happened a lot of times in my life, I've had really good relationships with students and athletes and youngsters in theater, especially. And his son was very fond of me. We were in a show together, and I helped him out with some things. And mm-hmm. he was a very shy boy. And he and I kind of hung out backstage together and things. And so his father remembered that.
Yeah.
And brought it up when I went kind of for an interview. And he said, you know, well, let's try this. He said, you know, I know my son really thinks highly of you, so you must be okay. And it was a fun place to live.
I've heard a bit of this story before, because you told me about living in the vet's office another time. And I remember a little bit of an add-on story where you did get some emergency calls in the middle of the night. And that was the purpose of the insurance discount for the vet, was that he had somebody there for emergencies. But you managed to wiggle out of that one.
Yes. Yes. And I got a lot out of living there. If I had listened to my sister, which is the other part of the story that continues, I would have stayed there. But I made a life change. but one of the things I got out of there was one of my absolute favorite stories that I wrote, because I lived in that building and had a wonderful experience. And so there was a Christmas story that I wrote that I'll tell it at Christmas time.
Okay.
Someplace. Yeah. And I wrote it because I lived in that room and in that building. I even got once to be an assistant to him operating on an animal because it happened that in the middle of the night he got a call and an animal had been hit by a car. Mm. And he told the people, if you can get him, you know, if you can meet me at the center. He lived 20 miles outside of town. He had a farm. And he woke me up and said, I need help. He said, it's real simple. You just have to be there with me, and I'll tell you exactly what you need to do. I didn't touch the animal at all, mm-hmm. but I got things for him and read some numbers from him. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
that I,
very cool.
Learning experience. So
it was great living arrangement. And, yes. And you know, we talk about those things these days, that hooking up intergenerational partners for spaces to live sometimes works really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's time for a station ID, because we didn't do one before you started your story. So let me tell everybody that there you are listening to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. And if you go to enlightenradio.org, you can listen right now. If you go to talltales at enlightenradio.org, you can listen to podcasts, including this one, when it goes up later this week. What else do we need to do this morning,
Stosh? Stories in the round calendar.
Yeah, okay. Good idea. Do you want to talk, or shall I talk about that?
Yes.
All right. Well, I've said a couple times that Eileen Evans is our teller this evening at Stories in the Round at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Sear Foss Pike. That's just west of Hagerstown, just outside the city limits. And if you want more information about that 7 o'clock performance, $10 in advance, $12 at the door, you can call me after this broadcast, after 1 o'clock, at 301-730-1638. You can also reach me by email in general, but probably not today because we're down to the wire. If you want me to get your call or get your contact information right away, you should probably use the phone. But the email address for future reference is Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And then next month, on August 28th, we have Megan Hicks coming in from Philadelphia to tell stories. Megan was with us, I think, 3 years ago and told one of my favorite stories, Jack the paper guy. That's not quite the right title. It's the paper something else. But it's a wonderful story. I don't think she's going to do that one this evening, but she has some news stories that she'll be sharing with us. And Megan also has her own storytelling venue in Media, PA, just outside Philadelphia. So come and get to know Megan on August 28th. Eileen Evans, who's there this evening at Stories in the Round, is a West Virginia teller, and she's been to Ghana recently and has been thinking about and researching the connections of mountain stories, the mountain cultures all over the world. So she's going to tell some different tales and talk about the commonalities and differences in some of those different cultures. And I meant to tell you, Stosh, we did a couple programs about Jack tales recently, and one of the stories Eileen says she's going to tell tonight is Petit Jean, which is the Cajun version of a Jack tale, or the Jack character.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. She just gave me a couple highlights on the phone when we were talking. And she'll tell some African stories and some other mountain culture tales too, I think. So that's 7 o'clock at Stories in the Round. 301-730-1638 if our listeners want more information. We're getting to the wind down part of the show.
I have a little additional part to my story.
Do you?
Okay. Yes, I do. A small part that is that's attached to the first place.
Okay.
If you would like to hear it.
Take it away.
Okay. So in Baltimore, on Broadway, there is a theater called The Vagabond. And many people who do community theater for years loved to perform at The Vagabond because then they could put on their resume that they performed at the theater, at Vagabond Theater on Broadway. And that was a kind of a big deal, kind of a joke. But it was a very nice theater. Their shows were always 6 weekends, and there was always a private showing of the first weekend on a Thursday for a special crowd. And so if you were in the show, there was 25 performances, and it was paid theater. So the Thursday before, my brother-in-law said that he wanted me to leave on that Saturday, just less than 48 hours before that conversation, I went to the Vagabond Theater. It was in walking distance from my home. And I went to see a friend of mine audition for a show. And when I got there, he and I taught on the same faculty, he auditioned, and when he came back to the seat, he introduced me to the guy who was the director, and he said, I told the director that he should ask you to audition because there's some things in this show you could do. It was a musical variety show about 1934 in different places in the world. And so I thought, well, why not? I could walk to rehearsals. It was great, you know? And so I auditioned, and I was offered a role. And
of course you were offered a role.
I don't always get a role. So anyway, I was very excited. You know, on Friday, Jay and I talked at school and had a great time. You know, we told some people we were going to be in a show together on Broadway. And, and Jay had performed there a lot of times. And then the following Monday, I had explained to Jay that I couldn't walk to rehearsal. And now I was going to have a 27-mile drive each way to rehearsal. And I had thought maybe I shouldn't do it, but he convinced me that it would be fun instead of sitting in in the house every night by myself or in a tiny room. And so, my best laid plans of being able to walk to rehearsal back and forth turned out not to be so good. But it was a great show, and one of the things I got to do in that show was perform a duet with my friend Jay Butler, and that was one of the highlights of my performing because he was a well-known actor in Baltimore and lots of fun. So,
what a good story. Well, I'm glad you did that show too because now you have a good story.
Right.
Okay. So we've talked about Speak Story Series, and our listeners know that coming up, we have Jane Dorfman telling Arabian Nights, and our listeners know about Stories in the Round and Eileen Evans coming this evening, and then Megan Hicks coming in August. There are probably other story events around town. Are we ready to talk about any of our future storytelling events that we've been talking about, Stosh?
Yes, and this is an exciting thing for me. And it'll be for both of us because we're going to do this together.
It is exciting.
Yes, on Saturday, November 18th, at the Town Hall in Sharpsburg, Maryland, which is I believe the closest neighbor to Shepherdstown, West Virginia, very close, just a few miles away. We're going to be doing a telebration. And the telebration is something that was started 25 or 26 years ago through one of the members of the National Storytelling Network. And it's traditionally done on the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And it's a program to initiate people into storytelling and to spread storytelling, especially in communities at the beginning, especially in communities that weren't interested in storytelling because they hadn't been exposed to it. And so there will be celebrations going on in hundreds of cities throughout the United States that day. And ours will be free to the public. And it will not be for little children, although I know families will bring their small ones, but it'll be family friendly. It's going to be free. It'll be 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 to maybe 6 at the most, depending on any questions and discussion after the stories. There will be 4 storytellers involved, and I'm looking forward to beginning a program in my new living arrangement, my new home in Sharpsburg, my new place where my wife and I live, to help spread storytelling. And I expect that we should be able to get a good audience because there are a number of groups already who want to promote that. The Sharpsburg Historical Society, the Sharpsburg town itself, and Adam Booth in Shepherdstown has said he would help promote it. And certainly, and Fanny from Hagerstown will be helping to promote it.
So we're not ready to talk about what exactly we'll be telling that afternoon, but we're getting excited about
it. Yes, and it'll be family
sharing
friendly.
The word.
It'll be the kind of tales that that will be interesting to the families. And I've done many of these celebrations before, and sometimes people do bring youngsters.
Mm-hmm,
and,
sure.
That youngsters always seem to enjoy the stories as well.
Oh, yeah. I've been to celebrations, they're often kids there,
right.
Usually
so
children.
That's going to be something.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay. Next week on the Storytelling Hour, we're hoping that Eileen Evans will be with us following her performance this evening. She's going to do a call-in interview with us beginning at noon next week. So that will be July 31st is the date. So if this is a good time for you to listen live, you can tune in next Monday, July 31st at 12 noon to hear an interview with Eileen Evans. But of course, we also want you to come out this evening to Stories in the Round to hear Eileen in person, not only live, but in person. There's also a storytelling workshop on Saturday, Stosh is reminding me. It's a very small group, so there are not very many spaces left. But if you're interested in storytelling workshops, you can call me to get more information about that. Stosh and I will both be there for the workshop. And again, my phone number is 301-730-1638. There is a fee for the session, but it's not very expensive. So if you love storytelling and want to venture out into telling as opposed to only listening, there will be probably half the group are brand new storytellers, people who don't regularly tell stories and are willing to stretch themselves and get out of their comfort zone a bit. And lunch is included. That's 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And I'm providing lunch, so you don't need to bring anything. It's not potluck. We'll just have lunch as part of the day. And you might walk out with a story that you want to share with other people. So, do we have any final words of wisdom for our listeners, Stosh? I guess I want to not only encourage people to tell stories, share stories with family members and friends, but also be listening as you are out in the world to stories that you hear other people tell, and encourage storytelling when you hear a good one from someone else. Encourage them to tell it to others. And if you really think it's good, ask them if you can tell that story yourself.
And encourage all your family members to share stories, you know, and even coworkers. People do this all the time without realizing that they're doing a kind of storytelling, you know, around the water cooler on Mondays after the weekend football games or basketball games or their children's soccer games, softball games, things like that. People are always sharing stories about what happened over the weekend, or if they saw a good movie or anything like that. And that is a form of storytelling.
Sure.
It's not formal, but it is storytelling, especially in families, you know. Children may not want to hear grandpa tell a story when they're 12 or 13 because they'd rather be outside, but they would love to hear grandpa's story when they're 25 or 26, especially if grandpa has gone someplace.
Yeah, moved on.
Is not around anymore. I know I would love to be able to hear my grandparents' stories, and I can't because my grandparents were all gone before I was born. So anyway, tell stories, and for storytellers, listen to stories. That's the best advice that I think I've gotten from experienced storytellers, is to listen to stories. Listen, and by listening, you'll pick up lots of things and lots of hints just by listening to the good storytellers. And there are lots of places where you can find stories.
Even tonight.
Even tonight, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. You're going to do our closing.
I am. Okay. This is Stasia Okalski and Fanny Crawford.
Fanny Crawford, yes, Fanny Crawford.
Your co-host for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Independent community radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, closing out this week's show. The Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand your stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for some music coming up next. And at 2 o'clock, there will be Anne of Green Gables production. So another area for storytelling aficionados, people who want to tell stories or people who just want to listen to stories, is there are a number of storytelling festivals in this area and different states. The granddaddy of all storytelling festivals is the first full weekend of October in Jonesboro, Tennessee, where thousands of people gather every year, starting on Thursday evening and going all the way to Sunday evening. And you can find information about that storytelling festival by looking up the